This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Each time it appears as though a criminal charge may be brought against Donald Trump, the effort fizzles out and Trump remains free from accountability. The former president is under investigation from many sides, chief among them the House January 6th Committee, which is investigating wrongdoing in the insurrection on Capitol Hill and attempts to overturn the November 2020 election. But the Department of Justice has also been investigating Trump and so far brought no charges. Most recently, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, which has been looking into financial wrongdoing by Trump's New York-based businesses, has also dropped the ball. We turn now to Greg Barak, Emeritus Professor of Criminology and Criminal Justice at Eastern Michigan University, award-winning author and editor of numerous books on crime, justice, media, violence, criminal law, homelessness, and human rights. He's the co-founder and North American editor of the Journal of White Collar and Corporate Crime. He joins me to discuss his new book called Criminology on Trump. Welcome to the program, Greg.
Thank you for having me today, Sonali.
So first, let's talk about the issues around the January 6th insurrection. It should have been fairly obvious that Trump egged on his supporters to attack the Capitol Hill building and, you know, endanger the lives of lawmakers and others. We've had, as I mentioned, the Justice Department and the House Committee investigating this. Why has nothing really happened? There's been just so much investigation and investigation. Here we are in April 2022, and yet there have been no charges brought specifically against Trump.
Well, we can zero in on the three different cases. The one in New York involving his businesses, we would have thought by now a prosecution would have occurred, an indictment of Trump and other members of his family, like his CEO and his comptroller. It looks doubtful, but that case is still strong. It doesn't seem like Alvin Bragg is interested, although there's pressure and he seems to be saying that they haven't closed the case out. That remains to be seen. In terms of the Department of Justice and the insurrection, I believe that they are investigating and they're doing their own independent investigation. And I think that continues to take time. I have not ruled that out. And it could come as late as before the 24 election, but hopefully it would come before that. But that remains to be seen. The most interesting one, I think, is in Georgia and Fulton County. I just read earlier today that Fannie Willis, the district attorney there, has interviewed some 50 people voluntarily, and that there are 30 people who refuse to respond, and that she is seeking subpoenas for those individuals. So, you know, the wheels of justice move slowly. In Trump's case, they don't seem to ever quite get there, at least historically, with respect to his criminal behavior. He has been the Houdini of white collar crime, as I like to refer to him as.
So there's political crimes, then there's white collar crimes. These are somewhat separate, although, you know, Trump being who he is, blurred so many lines all the time. Even while in office, he violated numerous ethical boundaries and just, you know, violated policies and rules about things that he could and couldn't do. At the White House, he mixed up politicking with running the country, you know, campaigning with running the country over and over again. And he just simply never has been held accountable. So why is this the case? I mean, you mentioned Alvin Bragg. Let's just look at the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. Alvin Bragg is a progressive district attorney. He's so progressive that Zephyr Teachout wrote an article in The Nation just about a year ago saying that this is the man to take on powerful elites. And Alvin Bragg has mysteriously held back. One of the attorneys on the case resigned in protest. And he's a, you know, Alvin Bragg is a progressive. Why would there be such reluctance on the part of these folks to go after Trump?
Backlash.
Backlash from whom, though?
Just backlash from Trumpist supporters. Backlash from politics. Even though, you know, it's a Democratic stronghold in terms of New York politics. Prosecutors don't want to lose. They don't want to not have a slam dunk case. The excuse that they're giving at the moment in this case is that the comptroller, Connolly, has taken the heat, as he did in a previous case involving fraud, where he alleged that he did not know what he was doing was not proper. And supposedly that they're hanging this case on him as well with respect to the financial statements. I personally think that's a bogus explanation. As the attorney, you know, Pomerantz, that you referred to, who resigned, he said that there was plenty of evidence. And what we're really talking about when we talk about Trump is what he excels at. I mean, he is engaged in all types of crime, state crime, white collar crime, corporate crime, organized crime. There's no area of criminality that he hasn't participated in, but where he specializes or where he has excels over the years has been at falsifying business records and annual financial statements. There's no one better at that than him. And so the pattern is there for 30, 40 years. It's not new. It's hard to see why Alvin Bragg would not have gone forward with this case. I don't think that will be the case with Merrick Garland, even though there's a lot of heat and pressure in that direction. The notion that we don't want to politicize these cases, they're always political. There's no way that you can get out from under that.
Especially when we're talking about a former president. I mean,
right,
by virtue
right,
of
right,
that.
Right. And, you know, this is new grounds. Former presidents have never been, you know, prosecuted for a crime. And certainly those that have been impeached once have not. And those who have been impeached twice don't look like they are at this point in time. But I don't think the clock has run out yet. And with respect to New York, there's this esoteric law that says if Donald Trump and family have moved from New York, that the statutes of limitations pick up another 5 years. So as people thought they were running out, they may not be. So this may be another stimulant for Trump to run in 24. Hmm. So they can push that out to 29.
Right. So let's talk about your book, Criminology on Trump. You paint a sort of, the book isn't just about his crimes. One of the things that jumped out at me was that it's a sort of holistic, even psychological portrait of who Trump is to help us understand how he keeps, seemingly committing alleged crimes and getting away with them. So take us through that. There have been so many books written on Trump over the last 5-6 years. Perhaps chief among them is the book by his own relative, Mary Trump, who has a background in psychology. But why do you paint, what is the psychological portrait that you think we should know about Trump when we think about him as a criminal?
I make the case that he's sick and he's disturbed. He has, you know, multiple conditions, but I don't think that he's mentally ill in the sense that he doesn't know the difference between right and wrong. He's a rational player. He is not self-deceived. He fully understands what he's saying. He doesn't believe his lies for a moment. He is a rational player. He is a performer. He is a con artist. He's a gaslighter. I mean, all of these things contribute to his continuation to elude a law. He also knows the law better than most people. I mean, he has a, you know, he's been involved in some 4,000 lawsuits. Wow. He knows where he can go, where he can't go. He's very slick at what he does. Nevertheless, he is not a very contented person. He's an angry person. He's all the labels that people talk about: narcissistic, egocentric, without any empathy. But even those things don't tell the whole picture. He's a complicated person.
So there's this sense, if you study Trump as a crime, as a criminal, as somebody who's engaged in all of these nefarious dealings, that if you dig your heels in, the lesson that he sort of offers to fellow criminals is that if you dig your heels in, if you lie, if you deny, if you, respond aggressively, you can win. You can get away.
Well, you may get away in sort of the popular narrative, and you may be able to convince people of the lie. Obviously, many people share that lie, even with him. I don't think that he wins because he repeats his stories. You know, he wins most of his cases. He loses about a third of them, but the vast majority are tossed out, are thrown away. So he escapes for reasons that he mixes legal and illegal activities. And let me give it a great example. Part of Trump's power lies in the fact that he is part of a global and American system of kleptocracy. And what I mean by that is he's working with banks, only one bank. All the other banks have stopped playing ball with him. He's working with Deutsche Bank, historically the most criminal bank out there, paid, $600 million to the United States and the UK in 2017 for alleged $2 billion worth of laundering. When it comes to worldwide transactions, suspicious transactions, more than half of those are Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank plays in illegitimate money, laundered money, dirty money. Donald can't get financed since the early 90s by other banks. The only bank that's played ball with him, besides organized crime that's supported his monies and other laundered money through the world, has worked with Deutsche Bank. But at the same time, while that's not legal, there are many ways in which you can launder money that is totally legal through shell companies, offshore companies, both in the United States and outside the United States. Many of Donald's properties have been bought in Trump Tower through shell companies. We don't know who the owners are. These have been cash deals. So there's an enormous way in which dirty money finds its way into the United States legally. And that's part of the problem. Part of the problem is Donald, when he says he's not alone in doing these things, is correct.
Right.
He's not alone. And when he says, why are you picking on me? He has a point. Other entities like himself are doing similar things.
I remember during the debate that he had with Hillary Clinton before the 2016 election, the issue about his taxes came up. And when she basically accused him rightly of you know, not paying enough taxes or it being clear that he avoids taxes, he basically says, it makes me smart to avoid taxes. It doesn't make me a tax avoider.
Well, it makes him smart if he's, you know, doing things within the law. And a lot of the law allows him to do such things as conduct business and sell his properties to money that has come from not legitimate sources. And we don't know who those people are, because we allow them to set up shell companies, because attorneys and accountants, when they do this, they get paid for doing this service. It's a very, you know, it's $500 to $1,000, $2,000 an hour for these kinds of services. So my point is, there are legal venues for him to do that, but that's not his sole way in which he obtains cash. He also obtains cash directly with loans from a bank that has collected billions of dollars in laundered money themselves, and they've passed that to Donald. I mean, the interesting question is, Donald sued Deutsche Bank, Deutsche Bank sued him, they've countersued each other, but they continue to do business all the way up until the insurrection.
So, as a criminologist, what do you think needs to happen to ensure accountability? I mean, it just, given that he is this symbol of impunity in this country, it just seems like a big slap in the American people's face if he just walks away scot-free.
It's absolutely true. It would be, but not just from the business end of it. I mean, that's one contention, and all of the corruption, you know, that's been involved in his administration, the little corruption, the big corruption, all of that has been, you know, a slap in the face of all of our laws, not just economic, constitutional, and otherwise. And this case cannot be separated from what's happening in Russia and in Ukraine today, can't be separated from the autocratic versus democratic struggles that we see globally. It's all part of it. The United States can't make a case for democracy if it lets Donald Trump go free. If it doesn't prosecute Donald Trump for these crimes that everybody saw in plain sight, it makes a mockery of our system. So to me, that's the pressure that is starting to play out behind the scenes in this case. So there are multiple faces to be slapped if Donald, you know, eludes justice one more time, and he's been doing it now for 50 years.
So finally, Greg, what do you say to those people who, after Trump left the White House, just didn't want to hear his name? I mean, as a journalist, I've encountered this. If I bring it up, I've even had editors, you know, say, well, let's not mention him by name. You know, we can't keep focusing on Trump. He just sucks up too much oxygen. We're done. You know, he thrives on attention. And so I imagine that that's a little tough for you to encounter, as you've written a book about criminology on Trump.
But I'm schizophrenic like everybody else. I got sucked into this. I didn't start out to be a Trumpologist. I ended up being that. Most of the people who write about Trump wouldn't identify themselves as Trumpologists because they've taken snapshots of him, and they looked at him at different places. There are more than a few, such as Mary Trump and others, who have gone through his history and you know his entire life. Zero me back to your question again,
Sarah. Which was, you know, what do you say to those people who feel that giving Trump attention is helping him?
Oh, yeah, no publicity is good. You know, any publicity is good publicity.
But then, of course, not paying attention to him ensures that he gets away with it.
Well, you can't not pay attention to him. I mean, you don't have to focus on him daily in the news, but he's still in the news daily, even if you don't focus on it. But you have to look at the consequences and the things that the Republican Party is doing, you know, statewide. You know, that's the way in which, you know, you can focus in on the effects of Trumpism and how he has stolen that party and how that party has become nothing other than a shadow of Trump and a means of the empowerment. So you do it, you know, you can't escape it, at least not until the 22 elections. If he fizzles there with his backed candidates, he may become yesterday's news. I suspect he won't fizzle with a sizable number of his candidates because, I just doubt that that will be the case. So we'll be playing with him, and then he, you know, it'll be a matter of time before we're into the next round of primaries for the 24. If you read my book, I have many names for Donald Trump. And I seldom refer to him as Donald Trump or the president, more often as the Donald. But I do distinguish between Donald and the Donald and Teflon Don and a whole host of other names. It's difficult.
Right.
I don't know what you say to people, but you can't leave them alone. I mean, you just have to deal with the consequences of what we're experiencing day to day in our from the State House to the White House, and you know, every place in between, he's left a mark. There's a plan. There's something going on, and people are accommodating his desires.
Well, Greg, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Best of luck to you with your new book.
Thank you very much, Sonali.
My guest has been Greg Barak, Emeritus Professor of Criminology and Criminal Justice at Eastern Michigan University. We've been discussing his new book, Criminology on Trump. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com. By becoming a subscriber, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.